Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad in Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined, as always, by England's top Japan enthusiast, Mr. Pete Donaldson. Pete, how the devil are you doing?
I'm good. I'm having pineapple for breakfast, and you can't stop me. Tin pineapple.
It's horrible.
It's one of those kind of one of those food box services where they just send you like a load of cooking bits, and you're like, oh God, this is really intense, really technically kind of involved. You got to kind of do, like, there's 15 ingredients that you got to prepare. I'm like, bloody
50?
Hell, is this what 15? There's probably like so much little bits and bobs you got to put together.
Stuff,
and I'm
like
so
that.
Lazy. But what I didn't know was that they sent me an extra pineapple slices tin, so that's what I'm having for my breakfast, mate. Tin pineapple.
It's quite a sight watching Pete Donaldson haul pieces of pineapple chunks out of a tin.
It's sexy, is what it is.
The foremost football commentator in the entire planet, and he's just sitting in a room, swiveling in a chair with a tattered backdrop, eating pineapples out of a tin. Like,
I'm still waiting for my upholstery. My upholstery.co.uk has let me down once again. They will not be advertising on this bloody channel because they have let me down. They said 5 to 7 business days, and we're on the lip of the 7th day, quite frankly. They are taking their time. They are dragging their fabricated heels. It's very upsetting,
excuses.
Chris.
Excuses is all I'm hearing, Pete. But no. I got some cool news.
I think it's news.
Is it news?
So is it news?
I decided recently, I don't know if you've seen, but to celebrate the Tokyo Olympics, Google brought out the most amazing little 16-bit game, or it might be 8-bit. I think it's 16-bit. 16-bit game. You know, on the Google homepage, where you have the doodle, they call it Google Doodle,
yes,
where the logo is. Occasionally, when there's an event, they'll change it and have things there. For the Olympics, they've actually created this incredible 16-bit Japanese-style video game that looks like it's straight out the 80s, but it's so slick and polished and fun. There's lots of mini-games. And I sort of clicked on it and started playing around. And I looked up at the clock and like an hour and a half had gone by. Love it. Highly recommend checking
it
out.
The life of a YouTuber.
It is.
I haven't actually. I saw you tweet about it.
Pineapple Man.
Soliciting for people who did video game
companies. Yeah, so after playing this, I thought this would be really cool to do something like this with Journey Across Japan. I've never thought about making a video game before, and I'm not pretending like I'm making it myself. But after I played it for a bit, I thought we could do something similar to this. Like, we could make a 16-bit retro game, either for consoles or for smartphones, that's called like Journey Across Japan, with Natsuki as the main character. He's got a race across the country to save me from the evil Risottero or something. I don't know. But like, I just love the idea of doing like a Journey Across Japan video game. And I don't know. So I put out a post on Twitter and sort of asked if there's any video games or people that are developers that are interested. And we got a lot of a pretty big response. Got like 50 emails to work my way through. Lots of artists, designers, some pretty impressive companies in and out of Japan. So
voice
very exciting.
Artists.
Yeah.
Voice.
Oh, look at it.
Oh, Chris.
You'll be too busy eating your
pineapples. Unbelievable. Every week we mention, what is Pete's dream? What's Pete's little dream? To have a little speaking part in a video game. And now this just falls in your lap. And you forget old Daddy Donaldson stuck in his unlovable little upholsteryless little hovel. I am dying.
What do you think though? Like, what can we do with the video game? Voiceover.
Look, voiceover. As with all vanity projects, Chris, I very much think it's an excellent idea, and you should do it because it keeps you off the streets, keeps you busy, and it gives you. But I do worry that you're not going to be doing the work because. It's difficult.
No, I'm not going to do it.
You literally can't. You don't have the training. But it takes a very long time to make video games. It takes a very long time.
You've got $500 and 2 weeks. Make it happen, Pete.
A Donaldson game jam. I'll get on Unreal Tournament. I think my last bit of video game development was Unreal Tournament, mid level in that of my student house.
Oh, God. That's kind of cool. I don't know. I feel like 16-bit would be the way to go because you could still deliver like a premium feeling game, right? For a reasonable price. And I don't think we could have like a 3D game that's good for that price point. Or a 3D game that would work, really. It's got to be 2D.
Why don't you... A friend of a friend is currently making a really horrible map of London in Duke Nukem 3D. The Fear engine or the... I can't remember what engine it's called, but it was kind of the game engine that sort of crossed the barrier between Doom and Quake. It had this weird kind of 2.5D kind of style to it. It wasn't... You could go up and downstairs and stuff, but it wasn't really true 3D. It was... I don't really know what didn't make it to like 3D and 2D, but it was weird. Very weird. But very anarchic. It sort of lent itself to like some very anarchic bloody games. So he's putting like a Pret-a-Manger and a Prius, and he was asking for what's the trash that you see in the street in London these days. And people were obviously saying that, discarded blue surgical masks.
Yeah.
I suggested nourishment, cans of nourishment. Do you remember that?
Oh, God.
It was like a Nestle kind of meal replacement that drug addicts used to drink.
That stuff was terrible.
It was all right. It was colourful and pink, and it was a meal replacement. I used to absolutely slam them. That and peanut punch. Beautiful. Bigger juice. Fantastic. It's the stuff you only see in London. Bigger juice, peanut punch, small kind of Capri Sun sized eggnog and cherry wine. It's beautiful.
You're painting a very bleak picture of central London.
Lovely.
Good God. That sounds cool, though. I don't know. I do want to make this happen, though. I am serious about it. My philosophy, though, either we pull this off, we go the whole hog and make a great game, or we don't do it at all. So going to enter talks with some video game companies, fund it through abroad in Japan, and then maybe if it gets to a certain point, use crowdfunding to sort of take it to the final stage. We'll see. I don't know anything about video games, and so I've got to sort of educate myself quickly on the world of video game production. But it's a fun little challenge. Am I at my depth? Definitely. But
not in the slightest. I had a night out in Kyoto with a friend who took me to like a couple of games. It wasn't a game jam, but it was like a load of sort of gaijin developers who live in Kyoto. Obviously, a lot of the devs are in Kyoto.
Yeah, yeah.
They were all in this kind of party, slightly fancy dress and stuff. And I was like, I had a lovely night. Everyone was bloody lovely. I met loads of like composers and stuff who were doing this and that and programmers and things. It was really, really fascinating. And it's kind of like you don't see that side of Japan very often. You don't see small scale developers who make, quite simple, not simplistic, but you know what I mean? Like, quite
like
retro-y looking
style.
Games, I suppose.
Yeah.
Well, not AAA kind of experiences,
and you don't
see that sort of thing too often coming out of Japan. You don't hear those kind of voices often enough, in my opinion. And cool.
Kyoto is definitely the epicenter of a lot of the cool indie video game developers in the country, mainly because Nintendo are there, of course, and that's where they all kicked off shop. But I'm going to see what happens. If you guys have any ideas on what you'd like to see in the Journey Across Japan video game, I'm all ears, but I definitely think Natsuki should be the main playable character because it's not going to be me. I wouldn't ever want to play with me. Natsuki
look,
would
if
look cool,
secure his, if you can secure his imaging rights, that would be absolutely fine.
I own him. He's mine.
Oh, God, it'd be sweary. God, it'd be sweary.
There'd be a lot Peggy of swearing 18. And there'd be a lot of cigarettes, but it would be cool. It'd be very cool. We've got
Natsuki's
a story.
Big fag adventure where he's just getting, grabbing as many tabs as possible.
Well, instead of like hearts, it would be cigarettes, wouldn't it, as a power?
Yeah, yeah.
That's the sad bags. Truth. That is the sad truth. Like a rock guitar. Maybe we can go for a punk angle. We've got a story from Hermani from Sweden. He says, hi, guys. I had many memorable encounters and experiences during my first visit to Japan in 2006. However, this story in particular is about when I happened to find a 5,000 yen bill on the street. Wow, that's $50. It's a lot of money. I think the most I've ever found is 500 yen. I was walking down the street with my friend back to our hostel when I almost stepped on said note. I picked it up and we decided that the best course of action would be to hand it over to the closest police box. Wow, that's very noble and very un-British. He's from Sweden. The man is from Sweden. Once we somehow managed to explain that we had found the money just down the street, the police officers looked at each other with a worried look without saying anything to us. I was starting to get nervous about what that look meant and whether we had done the right thing.
One of the officers thought it was a bribe. It's 50 quid. Let me do a crime.
Definitely a bribe. One of the officers picked up a phone and after a few rings started speaking in rapid Japanese to someone on the other end. After some time, he turned to me with the phone in his hand, pointing towards me saying, Interpol, the global police organisation. I was at this point almost sure we were in trouble and nervously took the phone and put it to my ear. The man on the other end explained in flawless English that since we had found the money, we are legally allowed to claim it if no one comes to pick it up within 30 days. And thus the police officers were wondering if we'd like them, if we'd like to give them our contact information, if we'd like to exercise this right. I explained to the person on the other end that we were only there for 3 weeks and it would be okay to waive this right. Turns out the call to Interpol was to translate from Japanese to English. I wonder if they'd simply use Google Translate these days. On our way out of the police station, after being thanked profusely, we turned back one last time to see that all the officers were bowing deeply in our direction without even looking at us. Best regards, guys. Keep up the awesome work. Hermani from Sweden, an honourable Swede. What a beautiful story.
I would have liked if they looked back at the cabane, looked at the police officers, and they were dancing.
Dancing.
And they were on the way at the 7-Eleven with a big bottle of whiskey under their arm.
I think that's fantastic.
Look, what are you going to spend for 50 quid? What is that? 35 quid, 40 quid? Like, what are you going to get for that that's going to fill your heart with joy?
That is a solid nomi hordai, or you can drink session with some yakitori chicken skewers thrown in. That's about 5,000 yen a head. So, yeah, okay. That's what I would have spent it on. Right. How'd you spend your 5,000 yen?
I just got the newsagent and buy a load of magazines.
Oh dear. What a beautiful story. But I remember there was, I think we read out a story a few years ago where it was a convention and somebody put down like 100 yen on the side near the entrance. And they sort of did it as a test to see if someone would take the money. And then they came back 2 hours later on while walking around the convention. They sort of came back and there was like a pile of money, of like 100 yens, 50 yens, 10 yens that people just put on it because people had just assumed it was some sort of, I don't know, like a Japanese temple almost, some sort of ritual. Oh, it's beautiful. It's completely opposite to what I know and what I'm raised to experience in the UK. But
you should do like a kind of how to make more money, kind of those Facebook videos you see about those guys in like nice houses with the Maseratis, and they sort of go, hey, this is how you make $1 million a day with my new kind of Ponzi scheme or whatever. But it's really just leaving some money in the street, and just more money just arrives. It's crazy.
Well, seriously, imagine if you'd done this person that had left 100 yen at the convention at the entrance and then come back to a pile of money. You just swiped it all.
It's confusing, exactly.
Just interest. There's more interest there than most bloody banks give these days. It's incredible.
Yeah, I'm right.
There you go. One thing that's not incredible is drunk droning. We've all heard of drunk driving.
Ooh.
Have you heard of drunk droning?
No.
This is an arrest, the first of its kind in Aichi Prefecture, in the Nagoya area. So, like, drones are everywhere these days. As we talked about in last week's episode, the opening ceremony for the Olympics involved thousands of drones in the sky creating an incredible globe, which Pete was underwhelmed by, even though everyone else loved it. Why are you underwhelmed, Pete? Why didn't you love it?
Very, very wasteful.
Wasteful?
All that and it's
drones
energy.
In the shape of a globe, Pete.
Drones in the shape of a globe.
Retweeted everywhere.
Imagine if you were in charge of like charging all the drones up at like 10, you just didn't have us. Oh, for crying out loud. This is going to, I just didn't charge it up overnight. Now I'm in big trouble because that's got rid of Taiwan. That's going to create an international incident.
Oh, God.
We've lost a bit of Nepal. Shit. Oh, God.
Oh, good God. Well, luckily, these drones that we witnessed over the Olympic Stadium just last week were not operated by a drunkard. Unlike what happened in Aichi Prefecture this week, a 56-year-old man became the first in the prefecture to get busted for violating the newly enacted law against flying a drone while intoxicated in Toyota City. Ooh. And Toyota City, if you're wondering if Toyota's based there, yes, Toyota City is just Toyota. The company's so big, they've literally got a city in a slice of Aichi Prefecture. In a Toyota City, the suspect consumed 8 cans of beer between the hours of 7 a.m. and noon. Interestingly enough, all that morning he was drinking and was motivated to start cleaning his room. While tidying, he happened upon a drone which he'd bought a few years ago. He took it out of the box to see if it still worked. Upon learning that he did, the drunken suspect abandoned his cleaning ambitions and took it for a spin. The drone weighs 540 grams. It collided with the window of a nearby residence. The neighbour then called the police. The police came round and found he was drunk and flying a drone while inebriated. And to be fair, as somebody who flies drones quite often for videos, they're pretty bloody dangerous. Like, I nearly chopped my fingers off once. Well, the first day I bought a drone, I nearly sliced off all my fingers.
You let me have a mess around with your drone on the roof of an abandoned wedding chapel, and it was a very windy day, and it kept saying your phone kept saying very windy, coming down now. I was like, I've just started, guys. Let me do a loop de loop.
I'm amazed we pulled that off. That was the opening drone shots for the tsunami documentary that came out last year, and I remember it was quite a windy day. And we just bought the Mavic Mini, which is a very lightweight drone. It's 199 grams, very lightweight. And it just kept, it got blown away by the wind. And I had to sort of veer it over and use like special dive bomb tactics to sort of get it back to us before it got blown away. But they're pretty dangerous drones. Like, if one slammed into your face, you're potentially going to have life altering injuries because they travel like 40, up to 40 sort of miles per hour, some of the bigger ones.
And 540 you put knives on yours because you did Robot Wars.
To be fair,
you can never leave it behind.
If the TV series Robot Wars was brought to the modern era, it'd be a very different Robot Wars.
Imagine just getting like a little claw hammer attached to a drone, if you could pick it up on a rope and just go around a 7-Eleven knocking shit out of everything.
That would be a really good TV show, wouldn't it? Drone Wars.
Yeah.
Just attach some like weapons to a drone hammer. And fly it around. That'd be well good.
Up stuff. Yeah,
why has no one done that yet?
Sounds like
a Top Gear episode that has yet to happen.
Have a supermarket, 7-Eleven, the same makeup, the same products in a warehouse. So there's no ceiling, so the drone's not going to hit anything. And you've just got to go around and just, you know, like supermarket sweep, but you've got to collect or smash up the most valuable stuff. And the people who run the supermarket, or this virtual supermarket for our television purposes, have to throw those little orange balls that explode with ink on them. At the drones to knock them out of the sky, and you've got to avoid it. Come on, telly.
I've still never seen these orange balls that they have at Japanese convenience stores, which they throw at people that are stealing things and then cover them in paint, right? They explode, cover them in paint, and then police officers can see them. I bet you
want to bite one. I just want to just grab one and just go, ang, and bite the glassy orangey ink and just be orange man.
I wonder what goes through your thoughts sometimes.
You know when something's just so it's a fragile little glassy membrane, because, you know, they throw them and they hit the ground and it splashes this indelible ink. And I imagine just biting into it, and the ink could be on your skin for years.
You'd be carried out by
the police with manacles around your back, and you'd just be orange, and you'd be in the news because it's the guy who bit the forbidden orange. Oh, lovely.
The forbidden orange.
The naughty orange. Naughty peach.
You thought about this too much. This,
I, have. I have indeed.
What do you think, though? 540 grams of terror slamming into your face. Like when I got my first drone.
Yeah.
So these drones, right, to land them, you have to sort of be step. You have to step away from it. And I remember my first drone, I did something very, very stupid. It was the Mavic Air. I got it home to my apartment and I wanted to just see how it takes off, right? So I took it off in my apartment. I regret this immensely. But, you know, I thought it would just hover a meter off the floor. And it did. And it hovered fine. Didn't damage my apartment. But then for some reason, it didn't land. So what you're supposed to do when you land a drone is you hold the stick down for about 2 to 3 seconds and then it will start to lower down in an automated fashion. Or you press a button on the remote. But for whatever reason, I just could not get it to land. So I tried to sort of pick it out of the air and bring it, just sort of catch it, bring it out of the air. But because it's got sensors on the bottom, as I went to grab it, it moved away from my hand every time. It was really quite impressive. I was like, oh, shit, we're all going to die one day because these drones are going to take over. So every time I went to reach for it, to grab it and bring it down, it sort of moved up and jumped in the air.
I thought it was
by about
the ground.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
So I got really aggressive in the end and I sort of reached up and like did a jump, sort of jumped up in the air to catch it. And I grabbed it really hard and started pulling it down. And then the tops of my fingers went through the blades of the drone. And like three of my fingers, the tops got sliced off. Like clean off.
Is it really that? Is it really? It was not clean off. Really? That violent?
Yeah, it was
wow.
really bad. There's blood everywhere.
Oh,
like,
no.
It was like a Tarantino film. There's blood like splat all over the window. The blades. It was really bad. And I learned a lot that day. My first day flying a drone.
The thing that kind of surprised me, I borrowed the humorist Danny Wallace's drone because my dad wanted to fly it, but he didn't want to buy one himself because he said he'd be embarrassed to have a drone. But Danny had one sent because he does a bit of tech work here and there. And I sort of made it fly in the front room like you. But it was a toy drone, really. It was one of those very, very light ones. And so it was just, the blades, I don't think, would have done me a huge amount of damage, but it just made me laugh. It was just like, the noise is very loud. The noise is very loud.
Yeah,
it's very violent, and it herky jerkies up very, very quickly. And you're like, oh, bloody hell. Can you calm down a bit, mate?
Pretty dangerous. I remember flying, you could get like a toy one. And I used to, for Christmas back home every year, I'd just get my dad a drone because he likes tech. This is the guy that built a robot for Robot Wars.
Robot, mate.
So I used to, and he'd get bored, any present. You buy him anything, he's like, oh, that's good, isn't it? And they just chuck it in the bin or just hide it. So I'd always buy him a drone and then he'd crash it in 3 minutes and that'd be his Christmas over. But like we got it and we're flying around the house and the family dog just thought it was some sort of evil creature. And he just came out of the air, grabbed it out of the air. The blades like trimmed his beard, his like dog beard, but like trimmed off. And then he smashed it to the ground and ripped it to shreds. And that was the 20-pound drone destroyed in mere seconds after being taken its maiden flight. Drones.
Bet that was fantastic.
It was pretty
funny. Power Rangers scene.
It was pretty fun seeing a schnauzer dog come running around the corner, look at the drone for about 3 seconds, and then jump and do like a somersault in the air and snatch it out with his mouth. Impressive.
Oh my God. I may have been delirious with tiredness and booze and the rest at the weekend at the stag do. But I did retweet a video of a dog giving his owner the eyes. Because he just keeps on sort of like not saying anything, not moving his face or his mouth or anything, his muzzle. And he's just looking up at the... the dog leashes. He's looking up at the dog leashes and then looking back at his owner. Looking up at the dog leashes, looking back at his owner. Pete Donaldson on Twitter, I've retweeted it. It's just joyous. This dog is trying to sort of go, please take me for a walk, without actually going, please take me for a walk. It's wonderful.
That's awesome. Dogs are smarter than you think.
They really are. Lovely chaps.
But drones, I must drones admit though, like, it's crazy to think you can produce these stunning shots from a drone these days. Like, it really does up the quality of the videos. I'm annoyed at myself in many ways. When we started this podcast in 2018, at that time, I was a drone skeptic, right? I was like, drones, rubbish. And I think it's because the way they were used by people was very superficial. Like, you'd have, like, some douchebag doing a somersault backwards on a mountain and just filming themselves, like, not showing the scenery. And so I realised that, and I got one. And I think there's scarcely been a Abroad in Japan video since that doesn't contain a drone shot somewhere at some point. And like, it's incredible. Like, if you look at Journey Across Japan, which you should definitely do, it's a great series, we're getting shots that, like 10, 15 years ago, only helicopters could have got. And in fact, better than a helicopter, because you can fly closer to buildings, like the abandoned island, Ikishima, we did. Like, you could just do some incredible things with it. I think drones are amazing. I still think you've got to be careful how you use it. Don't chop your fingers off. Don't get drunk. And remember that they're not a toy. And I do take it very seriously. And in Japan, there's a few rules. You're not allowed to fly them near airports. Makes sense. We all remember what happened at Gatwick Airport in the UK a few years ago when the whole airport got shut down.
Did they find that guy in there? Did they find that guy in there? And it would have been a guy. Let's make that very clear. Because they're idiots.
It was a guy called Barry in Crawley.
A guy called Barry. Right.
I didn't find him. I didn't find him, her, it. No. It might not have even been a drone. But they are. So you can't fly it near an airport. You can't fly it near a nuclear reactor. Again, makes good sense. And you can't fly it near a city, a populated area, a densely populated town. And there's a good map, a good app called Drone Maps. And you can see like where you can and can't fly drones in Japan and anywhere in the world. And I highly recommend using that, lest you get arrested for flying a drone somewhere that you shouldn't. But other than that, Japan's pretty good with it.
There's an amazing scene in one of my favourite films, La Haine, which just follows these three sort of kids who just hang out on the streets in Paris. And it's just, you know, frequently harrowing, but very funny as well. Vincent Cassell's sort of breakout moment, where he's just a little rat boy, like wrong-un. And it's really good, really beautifully shot. And there's a shot in that that I went to the cinema to see it again probably about 6 months ago, and it comes out of like a window, and it just kind of keeps going, like it starts floating around, and it's a bit herky-jerky and a bit janky and stuff.
Right.
But I mean, this is 1994. And that would have been like a proper little mini helicopter gyrocopter jobby. And it, that those kind of shots weren't sort of done very often. And obviously now it's, you know, you can do it. I could probably do it.
Well, that's not going too far, Pete. Not too far. Pineapple man. Pineapple's
in the There's pineapple all over this, all over the, all over the balancing drone. Gyroscopes in this drone.
Oh, good God. But this year, DJI, the company that sort of run the world of drones in many ways, they did release the sort of VR headset drone. I can't remember what it's called. The DJI. Do you know what it's called? DJI.
DJI VR. I'm going to speculate.
Something like that. And you wear a headset and fly it around. And
so it's like you're floating around.
Yeah, it must be really trippy. I don't want to do it. I watched a guy who was. I watched it from the perspective of the drone, of him flying it around. FPV drone, sorry. Yeah, first person view drone, right? And he flew it around. And he wasn't thinking, and he flew it like around the house, under a tree, and then straight into his face, about 35 miles an hour.
His own face. That must have been very confusing, because you're looking at your own face.
It must have been so weird, yeah.
Out of body experience.
Isn't it? I mean, seriously, I want to get one just for the fun of it, but I know I'm going
to
crash it.
So it can't be, it wouldn't be responsive enough to transmit the data needed to move a little camera around on the thing. So it must be a 360 degree view or 180, whatever. And it just fires that video towards to you. And then the computer sort of works out, you know, what point to be looking at the, you know, at that video feed effectively. So it wouldn't, you know what I mean? It wouldn't be moving a camera in the drone. It would just be firing down one static 360 camera view to you.
It's not a 360
sort of turn
view.
Around and stuff.
Yes, it's right. still a standard camera angle, like 24 millimeter, I think. But there's so many people that are incredible at doing it now and can fly them. Like, there's so many great videos online. There was one of the bowling alley where someone flew a drone like across the car park in the front of a bowling alley.
That was insane. That was insane.
Along through the skittles, and it's just like, how have you done this?
It was just a random bowling place as well.
Yeah,
because it was just so good, it took the world by storm, which is fantastic.
The filmmaker in me thinks brilliant, greatest technology ever. The sort of worried techno futurist paranoid figure in me is deeply worried by what drones can do. Like, they're so fast, they're so quick at manoeuvring. When they're weaponized, these are going to be not to be trifled with. Like, they're going to be very, very
put
dangerous.
Put a hammer on yours, mate. Have some respect. You started it. You're the man who made the first gun.
Robot Wars. The first chapter in the history of killer drones. Good God. But that's a story for another day, killer drones. But for the most part, drones are good, and Japan is a very good place to fly them, what with the beautiful scenery, mountains and whatnot. definitely do it. We'll be back in a moment, guys, with the fax machine and your stories.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania, too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritize your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
And we're back with the fax machine. What have we got this week from our listeners, Mr. Donaldson?
Rhys has got in touch. Hello, Rhys. Hello, premium podcasters, says Rhys. Fellow Brit here, once it's safe, I intend to make up for the last year's lost time and spend a year on a working holiday visa in Japan. Wow, can you do that? Rather than stick in one place, however, I want to see Japan in all its forms and plan to live in 11 different cities for a month at a time. Wow. That's going to be a lot of forms to fill in for new jobs that you're going to be doing. I wondered if y'all had any advice on where would be good to spend a month. Any advice or input would be appreciated.
Oh, that's a good question. And actually, so I came here on a working holiday in between when I finished the JET program, and I went back to the UK for a little bit. Then I came back here in 2016, and I was on a working holiday for a year, trying to set up YouTube and do it full time. And my plan was to live in, you know, five or six cities and have an adventure. But then I got to Sendai, and that just didn't happen. So it's a lot of effort. Although they encourage it when you apply for your working holiday visa in the UK, you've got to write down like what you're going to do, and they prefer people that are constantly moving around because they don't want you to settle down. So I did actually write in my plan, I'll move around a lot, I'll be everywhere, just give me the damn working holiday visa. And they did. But I'd say good place to spend a month, Kyoto, isn't it? It's got to be Kyoto, a city that I once loathed because I'd just seen the touristy bits, but actually it's a very cool city. And from Kyoto you can dive off to Osaka, you can go to Nara, you can go to Kobe, all within sort of 30-40 minutes. In fact, maybe Osaka might be better because it's actually in between all of those things. So yeah, sorry, Osaka gets my vote. What about you, Pete?
Yeah, I think somewhere, I do love Fukuoka. I think it's just the best city in it's rapidly becoming my favourite city in Japan, because the food's great, everyone's bloody lovely, and really friendly. So yeah, anywhere around there, the Kyushu sort of area.
Yeah, and you get to Nagasaki, which is one of my favorite. I love Nagasaki. Like, we went there on the last episode of Journey Across Japan, and you know, most people don't get to go there because it is so damn remote, that whole sort of western side of Kyushu. But yeah, Fukuoka is brilliant. And from Fukuoka, you've got lots of jumping off points to places like Tsushima. If you want to go there, like the video game, innit? Although from what I can tell, there's not a whole lot there, but maybe I'll go one day. Beppu, the biggest, most spectacular hot spring resort in all of Japan. And Kagoshima by bullet train. So you can go there, look at the volcano, and fly over it.
Boat somewhere as well. Could you not get a boat to like some of the islands as well?
Get a boat to some of the islands. Top tour guide.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Nice one.
True.
Fukuoka and Osaka. We've got one here from Animitra. It says, hey, Chris and Pete, just finished watching the final video of Journey Across Japan. The island-oriented season of Journey Across Japan made me want more water-based exploits through Japan. The scenery is absolutely stunning. So I was wondering, would it be feasible to make a series traveling across Japan by sea, perhaps even learning to sail a boat? Best regards, Orno Mitro.
We'd never what do you find make of that again? Thing? Chris, I would love to see you as some kind of 19th century, is it bosun or boatswain, kind of just block on a ship that's... I play a lot of Sea of Thieves, one of the very few video games I actually play, and I'm useless.
Is it good? Even on a,
yeah, it's fun. We should join up and play.
I love Rare.
Play a few rounds. It's cross platform and it's very popular. It seems I get in there, and then the Dutch arrive. The Dutch are always arriving, and we're always put under siege by a load of troublesome, quarrelsome, chaotic Dutchmen.
Well, I love pirates and I love Rare, the video game company, so I'll have to give it a look. But as for sailing boats, when we went to Yakushima on the first episode, there was another option. There's like three ways to get to Yakushima. You can fly, you can go by ferry, or you can go by like an oil tanker or something. And it's like a freight ship, basically, that goes every week or two. And it's got no air conditioning. It's got like a little room covered in just hot, sticky floors. And yeah, basically it looks pretty hardcore, and that would be kind of fun. I don't know, I've always thought about doing something like this. We did go on the ferry, but I think you just run the fun would run out very fast because it'd just be on a boat, wouldn't it? There's only so much you can see and do. So it sounds great on paper, but I think the reality is it's not as exciting as it sounds unless we literally get a fishing boat and just drive it around Japan, in which case we'd drown.
I remember there was a ship that some incels in Europe had taken charge of, or certainly rented out.
Yeah.
And their quest was to basically disrupt the Libyan refugee rescue operations, basically.
Right.
You know, stopping people leaving Libya.
Yeah.
I think it was Libya. Anyway, they had this video on YouTube, and I could not stop laughing at it because every lad looked like they absolutely honked, absolutely stank.
Right.
And they were these like German or Swedish fascists on this unlovable little frigate that they'd managed to rent off a loser, and they all had like amazing gaming PCs with like satellite phone internet, because they had to have the internet and they had to have their little video games and their pornography and stuff. But they they just sat in these little cabins, and none of them looked like seafaring folk at all. Their cabins were chaotic. Their sleeping arrangements were disgusting, and it was just like, oh, gross. Anyway, the engines broke down somewhere off the coast of Spain, and they had to be rescued. So yeah, go fuck yourself, lads. So that's what I think it would be like. You, gaming PC, excellent broadband.
A racist on a boat, brilliant.
I just can't see your sleeping arrangement would be any better than that, to be quite frank.
It would not be better than that. It wouldn't be fun. I don't know. We'll look into it. But I don't think we should get our hopes up about abroad on a boat any time soon.
Abroad on a boat. Get him on a boat and abroad.
We got one from Rachel and Callum from Scotland. Over to you, Pete.
Hey, Chris and Pete. I'm a huge lover of Japan, and my partner and I plan to visit for our engagement celebration in the future. However, I have a slight issue that I am worried about. I'm a wheelchair user. I'm thinking about the access to shops and restaurants, etc. Trains seem like they'd be a nightmare as they're so busy. So my question is, what sort of disabled access is there in Japan? Do you think someone like me would cope in such a busy, bustling environment? Much love, Rachel, Callum. From Scotland. A lot of lifts. There's not a lot of provisions on the transport, but you could say that for any major developed country, to their eternal shame. Try getting across London with even a broken leg on crutches.
Oh,
it's a fucking nightmare. So Japan's about the same as that. And the trains aren't always so busy that you wouldn't be able to sort of pile on a little bit. But I mean, it's the taxis as well, I guess. The taxi would be difficult because they don't have wheelchair access, do they?
I don't know about that. I mean, I actually think Japan is better than the UK when it comes to disabled access these days. I think that's one of the benefits of the Olympics, the ill-fated Olympics. Japan did boost its infrastructure and disabled spaces and access. Right. And yeah, I think when I think of every station I can think of in like the Tokyo area, they do all have like wheelchair accessible platforms. They do have wheelchair accessible toilets. So I actually think Japan does handle it pretty well. The main thing you've got to watch out for is, as you said, Pete, the bustling, crazy crowds of the stations. But if possible, I would just try and find a taxi service that has wheelchair-accessible ways of getting around, and that will get you around that issue. But other than that, Japan's pretty well prepared for it, though. I'd like to think that's pretty encouraging.
Non-step buses are quite popular as well, aren't they? Like non-step buses, like as in like, you know, the buses kind of like go down,
and
a little ramp comes out, and this Shinkansen, the main sort of station, Shinkansens are very wide and big, and they've definitely got wheelchair access. I've seen that before. Yeah. And they've got the decent toilets as well.
Absolutely. And we know people often worry about toilets in Japan. Was it last week we had a question about the squat toilets? I mean, they're not, I don't think they're disabled access friendly, but they're not friendly to anyone, least of all me. But again, they're as we said last week, they're dying out. Yay. They're going, squat toilets are disappearing along with the Hanko stamp. Yay, the 21st century.
Look, we are two, what you'd probably regard as occasionally able-bodied gentlemen. I think if anyone's out there who has gone across Japan or any part of Tokyo and stuff in a chair, let us know. Get in touch.
Absolutely, yeah. Always keen to hear your experiences and stories, guys. But keep the stories, questions, comments coming in to abroadinjapanpodcast@gmail.com. We'll be back in the next few days, do it all over again. But for now, guys, no matter where you might be, out in the big wide world, enjoy the rest of your week. Send me your ideas about the Abroad in Japan video game. And we'll see you again on the Abroad in Japan podcast. Bye for now.
Have you got in your hand a post-it note?
It's a post-it note.
Abroad in Japan is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.